You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I am joined today by antiquarian, book dealer, translator, and author, Steve Savadell. With 50 years' experience, Steve has been writing on the topic of magic and the occult since the mid-1990s, and has, over that time, come across a great many rare and fascinating documents, which he has devoted himself to translating for the modern reader. His latest work, a translation and commentary of Pneumatologia Occulta et Vera, The Hidden and True Pneumatology, is an exceptionally rare grimoire, yet unseen by the English-speaking world, containing elements from many sources of the tradition and exploring fascinating techniques of treasure hunting alongside the conjurations of Olympic spirits and the construction of unique divination tools. I am your host, Matt Hadfield, and it is with great pleasure that I welcome Steve Savadell to the Hadean Press podcast. Steve Savadell, welcome to the podcast. It's really great to have you on so that we can talk about your contributions to the occult community and your upcoming book. But before we delve into all of that, would you like to introduce yourself to our audience?
Hey, Matt. Thanks for the invite. Just an author and retired, basically.
And what was it exactly that got you interested in magic in the first place, Steve?
Well, that's a pretty long story. I have to go back to when I was only 5 years of age. I was diagnosed with a rare bone disorder, which resulted in me being placed in a full body cast. And being 5 years old at that age, anybody will tell you, it's a pretty stressful situation, and they put me on medication, so I was sleeping a lot more of the time. I ended up having this unusual, I guess, dream life where I would go to school in my dreams, and I would realize that I was dreaming and sort of go to school taking classes on various things that are more on the metaphysical side. And things just sort of went from there. I was in a body cast for over a year. And then I wore those leg braces, like Forrest Gump. I had them for 2 years. And so I was very, very immobile the whole time, laying flat. So I had a huge amount of dream experience and going into astral projection. And that was just as a little kid, 5, 6, 7 years old. And that's how everything pretty much started for me. I started reading everything I could get my hands on. And when I was a teenager, everything sort of came to me. And I was a weirdo in school when I only had one good friend. Turns out her sister was involved with a Wiccan coven just a short ways away from us here in Daytona Beach. And one weekend, they were doing a solstice ceremony, and my friend's sister drove us there because she was supposed to be babysitting us. She ends up taking us to a witch's coven. They did a little initiation for kids and let us watch and just slightly participate, and I became more and more involved in it over the years. And until I was only about 18 or 20, and after that, I started reading a lot more advanced material and got involved with the OTO through a flyer I saw at a bookstore. And I was initiated into the OTO to the third degree. But then I got myself expelled for a personal beef with another member. It didn't have anything to do with the order. And things just kept snowballing on like that. I could keep going on and on, but I don't know how much I should do.
Okay. And you used to run a occult bookstore back in the day. Could you tell us a little bit about that? What was that like?
That was great. I was a occult bookseller and aquarian dealer for about 20 years, from the 1980s up to 2004. And so I was also writing as well as running the bookstore. So that was well before the internet, of course. And so I printed catalogs on a monthly basis and mailed them to customers. I put ads in magazines for people to get a free catalog. And things just went from there up until the time the internet came along.
And did that change things?
Yes, great. Great improvement. For the smaller mom and pop booksellers, I think it was bad for Amazon and Barnes & Noble. They kind of crushed the little mom and pop places. But since I was a specialty dealer, just dealing in a cult and what I would say be specialized in the weird and unusual, there was a great interest in it. And so I did really, really well for a period of time, until a lot more people started getting into it, and eBay came along where people sold their own books rather than selling them to dealers. So
you have been contributing to the community for a long time now with your first book, The Magician's Workbook, published in 1995. Recently, you have republished your book, Goetic Evocations, through Hadean Press, as well as the Supreme Black and Red Infernal Magic. You have a translation of the Sefer Raziel Hemelech.
Yes, that's right.
In print. And now you will soon have another translation out, also through Hadean Press, which is of an obscure 17th century grimoire. Could you tell us more about this?
Yeah, that's a new translation of a virtually unheard of grimoire text. Mainly deals with techniques for finding lost treasure.
And what's its name?
Pneumatologia Occulta et Vera, the hidden and true pneumatology.
And did you find that through your antiquarian dealings?
Basically, yes. I actually, through a facsimile of an antiquarian edition, it was from 1821 set entitled Zauber Bibliothek, or the Magic Library. And it was an 1821 set by George Conrad Horst, and something similar to Das Kloster by Schiebel that was produced a couple of decades afterwards. It was a collection of occult and magic and theurgy and different mystical German texts.
So you say German, but this text has a very specific link to the Spanish city of Salamanca. What importance does that have to the text itself?
Probably mostly the reputation of Salamanca as being mystical city, and the University of Salamanca, which was established like in the 13th century, is probably the oldest and continuously running college, actually the oldest in the one of the oldest in the world. But it has a history of the devil teaching black magic to students in a cave on the grounds. So it's got a mystical legend behind it. Although it does exist, it's not legendary, which a lot of people think. There is actually a University of Salamanca.
So this text then, it's written in German?
Yes. It's a German manuscript, but it was in the university library, I suppose.
Okay. Because of this link to Spain, then, does that give it some form of a Cyprianic link?
There is a quote in the introduction of the text, but it's not based on Cyprianic technique or anything like that. I don't think there's anything specifically influenced by Cipriano, but the author, the original author, put a quote in from Cyprian, Saint Cyprian, and various other authors on the occult subject, and draws from various occult traditions.
So the title of this grimoire is a pneumatology. What exact science is that?
I think it was a deceptive title, because the true definition of pneumatology is refers to a particular discipline within the Christian theology, and it focuses on the Holy Spirit. Rather, it's not so much of a grimoire text, but it's more of theology and such. And there's also been titles on the similar subject with the title pneumatology that draws from spiritism and ghosts and apparitions and that kind of thing. But this is definite grimoire text, and they use the name, I think, to avoid having issues with the Inquisition and such.
You wouldn't want to draw too much notice.
Exactly.
For those of our viewers interested in the study and practice of the grimoires, Steve, could you tell us what stream of the grimoiric transmission does this grimoire fall into? For instance, what spirits make up its hierarchy? And as it's German, does it also have a Faustian influence?
No, there's not very much of a Faustian influence in this text. It's seems to draw mostly from the Agrippa and the fourth book of Agrippa and the book of Abramelin. The spirits sort of more match up along those lines, and especially the Olympic spirits from the Heptameron.
Interesting. Could you talk a little bit more about the link with Abramelin?
The spirit's name sort of match the hierarchy in Abramelin a little better than others, I guess. It's definitely draws from it in places, but it's not, you know, it's just in the Abramelin, it's just the spirits match up a little bit more than they do in other grimoires, like you said, the stream of transmission.
Mm. And so how about the Olympic spirits? Because we see the Olympic spirits, like you said, in the fourth book of occult philosophy, there's the Paracelsian influence there. What role do these Olympic spirits play in this grimoire that you've translated?
Well, that's one of the things I noticed when I found the book and I was flipping through the pages, and then I saw the talismans from the Olympic spirits, which were originally in the fourth book of Agrippa and the Heptameron. And so it basically matches those, but with a lot of additions, a lot of more additional material.
I think one of the most interesting and perhaps even shocking revelations you have uncovered in this grimoire is that the text itself contains a conjuration to none other than Hecate. Many of our listeners may know that Hecate plays some significant role in early, perhaps even proto-Solomonic magic. But as the tradition evolved, the Christian overtones came to dominance. What could you tell us, if anything, about this conjuration, and how do you think something like this survived into the 17th century?
Well, I'm sure it was published somewhere that the original editor had located the conjuration in some text. It's actually not a part of the book itself, but the introduction by the original editor. And he placed it in there towards the end of his introduction. So I'm not certain why, but it is a fascinating conjuration that I was not familiar with, and people I've allowed to see the text were very fascinated by it.
And what function do you think it played as part of the introduction to the grimoire?
I'm not sure what part it plays, other than it is one of the only pagan references in the text. I mean, he mentions a little bit about paganism, but it's not really in there very much.
You mention in your book that this conjuration of Hecate is somewhat morbid in that it revolves around a call to the dead, driving them through the graves. I think this kind of language will be really recognizable to anyone working with the documents of the Greek magical papyri. Do you think this constitutes a significant discovery, confirming many of the late Jake Stratton Kent's propositions that the grimoires are a survival of late pagan magical practices?
I'm certain that Jake would have found that to be the truth, that it shows an influence of the pagan magical practices along with medieval grimoire texts. It is a fascinating little piece of history. And like I said, that the morbidity is really interesting. It's not something that I myself have come across in the past.
Because it was the Hecate bit that I'm most excited for, because that spell reads like something from like the document to the waning moon in the PGM. You know, it reads like old world necromancy. And I just think that's really fascinating. I really want to see more links being made in that field, you know, connecting the ancient world to modern grimoire practice.
Yeah, I would like to see more of that. The text is just a small conjuration, but it has a big effect.
Could you practically use that conjuration in the text itself? Does it have any practical use?
I think it appears just to be inserted in.
Strange. It's so weird as well, because it would have been a nominally Christian environment that they were writing in.
Right. I was going to say the next part after that, Hecate, is a long Christian prayer, like from one of the popes at Grimoire's, the Pope Honorius or something. Mm. That's first they put in the Hecate, and then I think it was the end of a section, and then the next section begins with a long Christian prayer. So it's kind of a weird juxtaposition of the two.
And just that it survived through so many centuries, and the rationale behind even including it at all, it seems really unusual.
Yeah, I have no idea why you put it in there. I'm glad it did. I wish there was more like that.
So part of the title of this grimoire delineates it as a text that specifically focuses on the discovery of treasure. In your opinion, why do so many spirits in the grimoires have this treasure hunting focus? Why were people at the time so concerned with this?
Well, I think that people of any time are very interested in treasures and being wealthy. and finding money to live a very good life. And it is noticeable that in most of the medieval grimoires, there are spells and rituals for finding treasure or getting money, just as it is for a love spell or a spells for crops or fishing and safe travels and any number of things that are found in a lot of the similar ideals that you find in different grimoires. But treasure, I think, is one of the most obvious because everybody wants to find a little treasure now and then.
Do you think that it's still applicable today?
Well, in my experience, spirits, when you invoke spirits for treasure, it doesn't always work out so well. When I was practicing goetic magic, one of the first things I attempted was evocation to gain wisdom for one thing and secondarily for financial aid. And it just didn't really work out that well for these. The spirits are not so much able to control funding and money, and it didn't work out so well as far as the money type part of the spell.
Do you think that this ability could be reinterpreted today in some way?
Treasure can have a lot of meaning for people. I think even the right knowledge and information is a treasure. And people refer to grimoires a lot as being a little treasure. And if you mean just gold and silver, that doesn't always fit the bill.
So the goal of this grimoire really is about finding treasure. Could you describe something of an outline of the process that it requires the magician to undergo?
Really, this process is very complicated and includes a lot of different steps. I couldn't go through the whole listing of it for you, but some of the more interesting parts that you don't see in the other grimoires were like the construction of a divining rod and also of an earth mirror, which are both fairly uncommon. And then there's also the system of evocation and magic circle and specific spirits to call upon. Everything is definitely a lot more complex than I've noticed in other grimoire texts. One of the appendixes I've added to this book is a listing of many different treasure spells from various medieval grimoires. And this one, I think, is the most complex of them all, really.
So is this divining rod to seek out water or treasure?
I believe it's for treasure. Like a divining rod for treasure, like an earth mirror would be used for finding treasure as well.
So there is a particular part of this text which speaks about how these spiritus familiares want to be tricksters, or as the text calls them, brat spirits, which I think is hilarious. Could you tell us, have you ever come across this type of spirit in your own personal practice, and how did you tame them?
Well, I think anybody who's done serious evocation has come across what you're calling trickster spirits, or pains in the butt, really, I would describe them. But they're attracted to different rituals and different kind of energy. When I dealt with goetic evocation, that I would notice them later on after you're finished with the ritual and cleaning up. I notice those what I call elemental spirits. They would tend to be a little bit annoying, but easy enough to banish. But then they end up turning around and showing up at the worst possible times. So I have had some experience with this kind of what I assume is what is being talked about.
So another phrase that I found in this grimoire I thought was really interesting in relation to Christ was this idea of crushing the head of the serpent. Is this a coded astrological law?
No, it's a passage, actually a biblical passage that's repeated a couple times, I think. Crushing the head of the serpent, it's fairly known and used in prayers, being a passage from multiple sources. It also goes as bruising the serpent's head, taken to primarily refer to the final defeat of Satan. And also, if the seed of the woman is involved, it refers to the crucifixion. And it's a pretty known biblical passage. I'm not sure why it's been inserted into this text, but it's mentioned a couple times.
Perhaps it's something to do with the historiola, the telling the story of Christ while performing an evocation.
I think that's definitely possible, but I'm not sure how it relates to the particular text that we have here, but it's definitely repeated.
Okay, so what does this particular grimoire have to offer to the modern practitioner?
Well, I get the impression that this text is not just to be used strictly in the temple. It offers an alternative and incredibly practical methodology of divination, like maybe a field manual to be used out in the world instead of just closed away in your temple.
Interesting. So I think maybe a lot of people could find a lot of practical use for this, but especially in the realm of divination. I think there's a lot of divination tools and operations in this particular grimoire, and I'm so excited for everybody to get their hands on it, Steve. It's a really impressive work, and so thank you so much for translating it. Do you have any upcoming projects?
I actually have several that I'm working on with through Haydian Press. The next one is actually something that I'm really excited about, being a Book of Shadows, or Liber Spiritum, a Book of the Spirits, that was actually dated back just to the 19th century from the Eliphas Levi school, and transferred down hand to hand from students until the last, I think, when it was published in the 1970s by an Italian author who publishes a lot of books named Pierluca Perini. And he has an Italian version of it out, which I had translated into English. And I believe that's scheduled for release at the beginning of 2024.
Very exciting. All right. Thank you, then, Steve, for elucidating this text for us today and describing the contents of this book for us. I think this could be a really exciting new contribution to the grimoiric field of study. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to reading more from you in the future. So thank you again, Steve.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate it.
That was Steve Savadau, author of Pneumatologia Occulta et Vera, The Hidden and True Pneumatology, which will be available for pre-order from Haydian Press on the 15th of August. I think this text is going to give the reader a lot to think about, especially concerning methods of divination and of the materia that we utilize in the construction of such tools. This is definitely a field manual, something to be used out in the world instead of being secreted behind locked doors, and I hope that it inspires some to take up the challenge of actual treasure hunting in the modern day. Steve has several more upcoming projects, so I'm very much looking forward to having him back on the podcast in the future. Please make sure to like this video and subscribe to our channel for more author interviews and video releases, and I will see you all in the next one.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.